Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, at middle age, more and more of us are joining the sandwich generation, facing demands of raising our children and caring for an elderly parent at the same time. The number of adult children assisting aging parents has more than tripled in the past 15 years, and family caregiving often is called the other midlife crisis. As your parents age, you will want to avoid mistakes and prevent misunderstandings, both between you and your parents and among your siblings, over the best way to care for mom or dad, protect their health, and preserve their assets. And my first guest today, life transition coach Sherry Samaton, is here to talk about avoiding mistakes that could negatively impact everyone's well-being, family relationships, and finances. And I'm certainly all of us will want to avoid the type of situation that Sherry describes in the introduction to her book. She had a middle-aged client, Deborah, who has an 84-year-old father, Saul, who has lived alone the past 7 years following death of his spouse. And Deborah lives in the same town close by, and Saul suffers moderate memory impairment. It often leaves him frustrated, and he lashes out at Deborah when she tries to help. Saul insists on driving, but often gets lost and calls Deborah in a rage, not to mention he probably is a hazard both to himself and to other drivers on the road. He forgets to turn off lights in his car, which runs the battery down overnight, so he calls Deborah in a rage. And Deborah and her three brothers have talked to Saul about a senior living community, but he won't have any part of that and won't hear of it. And her brothers who live out of state tell Deborah she'll have to deal with it. And does this story sound familiar? Well, Sherry is here to discuss a better way. And Sherry Samaton is founder of LifeBridge Solutions, LLC, and has helped hundreds of families to cope with old age and end-of-life issues. She has more than 30 years of business and management experience. She provides life transition planning, caregiver coaching, daily money management, medical bill advocacy, and private professional fiduciary services. And she's author of the critically acclaimed new book, Facing the Finish, A Roadmap for Aging Parents and Adult Children. And she's appeared on numerous radio and TV programs nationwide. And we're honored to have her here with us today. And hello, Sherry, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, as you state in your caregiver survival kit, which I'll talk about later how you can get that, caregiving is one of life's hardest jobs, but it also is can be extremely rewarding, and a lot of it depends on attitude. Can you give us a few of your life-saving tips for caregivers?
Well, absolutely. So, first of all, let's clarify we're talking about family caregivers, not hired paid caregivers who do this for a living.
Yeah, no, we're not talking to pros here. We're talking to you and me.
Exactly, exactly. So, probably the biggest tip that I can provide is one that goes with so many other things, and that is the importance of communication and not assuming that you can read other people's minds or that they can read yours.
Yeah. That's the truth to so many things in life. So many problems are raised by lack of communication, aren't they?
It's exactly right. And I would say the second, you know, sort of biggest tip that will help you avoid problems on your caregiving journey is to do some planning. And it's optimal to do that planning long before the caregiving journey ever begins.
Yes,
but the reality is that most people don't do that. And it's not too late to plan. So whenever you're stepping into the situation, it's real important to try to take stock of where you are, but not spend a whole lot of energy looking backwards.
Yeah,
but rather figure out what can we do, what can we think about, plan for, what resources can we put into place so that things will go more smoothly as we move forward.
Yeah, it's pretty pointless to say, why didn't we do this 5 years ago, or something like that. Or why does one brother says to the sister, why didn't you think of this back when mom was healthy?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, you point out it's, you have to understand it's all about control. And I like the way you say that you must respect a parent's desire. And we all have that desire to remain in control of our own lives. And until we're very old and feeble, we don't like the thought of somebody constantly telling us what to do or where to live or anything else.
Well, that's absolutely right. And I think it's, you know, what my sort of thing that I repeat over and over again with adult children when I'm working with families is the following. And that is, your job is not to fix it. Because
yeah.
There's no way you can possibly fix the inevitable.
Yes.
You know, mom or dad, if they're very lucky, will have a good end.
Yeah.
But we're all going to have an end. So you're not going to fix that. And you need to accept that.
Yeah, sad
what
but true,
you can
we're all
going
to have an end.
Right. What you can do, though, is to try to be sure that you're keeping mom and dad safe. To me, that's the number one job of the family caregiver, is keeping your loved ones safe.
Yeah.
And as independent as possible within the reality of their situation and their resources.
I also like your suggestion that you have to take care of yourself, because if a caregiver, a family caregiver, gets all worn down or resentful that they're doing too much and the other other siblings aren't doing enough, they're not going to take good care of their parent or themselves, and they'll get burned out and may have their own health problems.
Well, that's exactly right. And in fact, there's many, many studies full of statistics about the percentage of family caregivers who actually come to an end before their loved one that they were caring for because of the stress of caregiving.
Yeah, that's a pretty unpleasant prospect that none of us want to go through. Well, as you advise in your book, the need for intervention may occur suddenly and without advance warning. I know when my wife's father died, her mother suddenly at 79 became dependent because he had handled all the family finances and all those kind of things over the years. And as an adult child who wants to get involved before something bad happens, what types of information should you seek out for your parents now, and how best can you keep it updated, current, and accessible?
Well, that's a great question. And what I like people to do is do what I call a life transition plan. And for me, that's kind of like an owner's manual for a life. We have owner's manuals for our cars and our dishwashers and pretty much anything with moving parts. Why not one for ourselves?
Yeah.
So the kind of information at a minimum you need is the basics. What do mom and dad have? Assets? What do they owe, if anything? Liabilities?
Yeah.
Does anybody owe anything to them?
Yeah.
So debts where they may have loaned money and people should be paying them back.
Yeah.
Income, what's coming in, and expenses, what's going out. I mean, that's just the basics.
Yeah.
And knowing those things, along with whether any end-of-life planning has been done with in the form of wills or trusts or power of attorney or healthcare power of attorney documents, those are the absolute minimum critical things you've got to know.
Well, what's a good way that you can approach a fiercely independent parent who refuses to share with you sensitive personal information? How do you, like you call it, bridging the gap and taking charge without taking over?
Well, here's what I suggest. Number one, it's best if mom or dad is willing to be open and share the information. But if they're not, that's okay. What I counsel older adults is the following. What's important is that you gather the information and that your children or the people who you're expecting are going to step in and care for you know that you've done so and where to find it. Kind of like break glass in case of emergency.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
So I have some clients, older adults, who don't want their kids in their business. They don't want their kids to know. So what we agree is that I'm going to work with them on making a life transition plan. And all they tell their kids is that I exist. They give them my business card, and they say, if anything happens to one of us, call the number on this card because this lady knows what you will need to know.
Well, that's true. If you put together a bunch of plan information and stuff, and then nobody knows where to find it. it's not going to do the children much good when they try to settle your affairs, that's for sure.
That's right.
Yeah, I know with my father, another way, a good way to do it is make the parent feel like it's their own decision. I know my father, he was a former chief investment officer of a life insurance company. He built his own personal portfolio. He was excellent at financial management. But then when he was in his mid or late 80s, we noticed that, he was starting to let things slip and just wasn't handling his finances, really wasn't up to it anymore. And yet my sister and I were able to convince him that he should go to a trusted attorney friend of his that then helped him turn his investments over to a financial advisor. And he considered that his own initiative, and everyone was happy. And, both my father and mother left a great gift to my sister and I, and that all their affairs were in order so that when they did pass away a couple years ago, it was a time for celebrating their life rather than scrambling around and trying to figure out what came next.
Well, and that's a perfectly wonderful segue. You know, the first chapter of my book is called The Best Gift You Can Give, Making Decisions. And you're lucky because your parents did so. They made decisions, they communicated what they needed to communicate, and they, as you said, left you in a position where you could enjoy their memory and celebrate their lives and not have the stress of scrambling, trying to deal with things without having a clue where to begin or what they would have wanted.
Yeah. Well, as you observe a parent aging, either from near or from afar, if you live out of town and away from them, what are some of the early warning signs that you should look for that inform you of the need for early intervention? Are there some signs that we should be especially aware of?
Absolutely. So the two most important things to look for are issues with regard to physical safety and issues with regard to potential fraudulent activity, financial safety, so to speak. So when you're looking at physical safety, you're looking for things like, new issues with mobility, getting up and down stairs, let's say the master bedroom's on the second floor, or the laundry room's in the basement. That can be a recipe for disaster because one fall can really put an older person out of business.
Yeah, and there's another thing that I know was of great concern with us as parents, driving. It got to my sister and I really didn't want to ride with my father. And, you may notice several fender benders or new dents and scratches on the car and that type of thing. And it's always very sensitive when you have to try to get mom or dad to give up driving.
Absolutely. So safety around those kinds of things is really important. One of the first signs with regard to financial safety is when you start seeing the mail piled up, often unopened, or pieces of mail stuck into magazines piled up on the coffee table, or tax returns that have always been filed timely, and now all of a sudden the returns both not been filed and not put on extension.
And obviously, if the bill collectors start questioning why they didn't pay their bills, or even worse, maybe they paid them twice.
Well, that's right. Another big thing is starting to participate in sweepstakes when they really never have gone in for that in the past.
Or these, these strange charities that call up and ask
for it. That's right. That's right. So those are all kinds of warning signs.
I know you also mentioned around the house, if you notice garbage piling up or the lawn used to be really neat and suddenly it's unkempt and unmowed, and that type of thing obviously can be a sign that there might be some slippage.
Absolutely. And another huge one that people don't think about but to me is an immediate tip-off is next time you visit, you open the fridge.
Yeah.
And in that fridge, if you see nothing but a jar of pickles, that's a warning sign.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
likewise, if it's stuffed with things that are green and growing things, that might be a problem as well. And
yeah, I always used to check on my mom's refrigerator whenever I went over there. She was pretty good. She always had pretty nutritious things. And, of course, she was in a care center where they could eat their meals down in the dining room all the time anyway. But
That's good, but that's nutrition is one of the critical things. When people, aren't eating properly, they can get weak. And weakness then can lead to physical, you know, potential issues like falls, like we talked about before.
Yeah, I noticed there's one that I didn't think of. It's confusion or irritability, where they neglect, like they used to call you every week, and they don't do that anymore, or when they seem to have much shorter temper than they were before, that type of thing, I guess, can be an indication.
That's right. And sometimes that's an indication of pain.
Yeah.
So somebody who's kind of got chronic pain can become irritable. And sometimes it can be an indication of early dementia as well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's important to pay attention to these things and to try to get help.
Well, from personal experience and observation, not only your relationship with your parents, but one of the major issues in parental care seems to be the potential for disagreement, hurt feelings, and outright feuds among siblings. Say one sibling, and I guess it's most often a daughter, gets saddled with most of the caregiving. Perhaps the parent even moves in, or one son or daughter makes unilateral decisions that the other adult children don't agree with. Or, of course, there's inheritance issues where one son or daughter seems to be angling for a larger share. Do you have some advice on how we can communicate with siblings and reach consensus so that we make our decisions before the actual necessity, or we can work together on that?
Absolutely. So the first thing you have to remember is that the optimal situation is for the siblings to contribute equitably, but not necessarily equally.
Yeah.
And that's a really important distinction, because equitably means if my brother lives 3,000 miles away, but he has a lot of money and he can write checks that allow us to buy help or things that mom or dad needs, that can be one form of contribution.
Yeah.
And there may be another sibling who is a medical professional who can really engage with the doctors and understand and communicate to the rest of us what's going on, and that can be very time-consuming.
Yeah.
So, you know, take stock of your resources as a family unit, and it's not always about dividing the check writing or dividing the time or dividing the attending of doctor's appointments. It's deploying each of you to your highest and best use in service of doing the best you can for your mom and dad.
That's an excellent suggestion. And then everybody agrees in advance what function each one will play. And when you have that kind of agreement, then there's not the hard feelings, or one doesn't feel put out at the other's expense.
That's right. The other thing is to remember that the golden rule doesn't always work. So the golden rule says, do unto others as I would want them to do unto me.
Yeah.
The problem with that is, let's say what I really want, if I'm the primary caregiver, is I'm just wishing one of my siblings would offer to come and spend the weekend to give me respite so I can just get the heck out of town, or just go take a bath and hang out in my backyard but not have to deal with anything with mom or dad. That's what I'm craving. But let's say that that sibling assumes that what I really want is to be told thank you for doing a wonderful job.
Oh.
So they'll shower on the thank yous, but they're not giving me any respite.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. And, no, I know in our situation, my wife's situation, her mother needed care. Her two brothers lived, or brother and sister, I should say, lived in Michigan, where her mother was residing, and we lived way out in Iowa, and we agreed to share like one-third of the time each with her living with each family, but she became to the point where she couldn't travel to Iowa, and so they ended up, for a short time having to share the duties while we got out of it, not that we intended to, but of course, soon after that, the mother needed to go into a nursing home because she was just not capable, the people weren't really up to giving her care. Her needs became too great, so that fortunately she qualified under Medicaid, so that it wasn't a financial burden or anything. But that's a very good point you make there about the dividing up the responsibilities. But it doesn't always necessarily work that everyone has them live with the parent live with them, or it may not work out because of distance or whatever.
Well, that's right. And a great example in your particular situation, in your wife's particular situation, might have been, okay, mom can't come stay with us a third of the time anymore, but what can we do that will make it easier for the siblings that are kind of there on the front line?
Yeah, that's very true.
You know, maybe that would have been to write a check, or maybe that would have been to come for a week so that they could get away, rather than mom coming to you, you go to mom.
Yeah, that would have been just... Like I said, things developed so quickly that we really didn't get into that kind of thing, because only probably a month or two after it started, she moved into that nursing home. But will you recommend in certain instances hiring a family transition coach, and what are some of the benefits from hiring this outside professional advisor? I like that idea.
Well, what I like to say is, you know, if you're really unlucky, you have to go through this once or twice and learn the hard way, and it's a very steep learning curve.
Yeah.
The advantage of an outsider is that those of us who do this for a living have seen it pretty much all before. We've seen every permutation and scenario, and we get to learn what works, what doesn't work, and get all kinds of creative ideas from other families that we can then suggest to you if you're working with one of us.
Yeah, that's, I know you mentioned in your guidance some specific situations where they can be of service, like an adult child realizes that a parent no longer can stay in their own home, and that you can help, you know, the parent and sibling doesn't want to move, and but the advisor can help work that out, or this is situation of divorce and important decisions on division of assets and liabilities. All those kind of things sound like very good ideas of where you might want to employ something like that. But now, when you say...
I also find, Roy, that people tend to behave better when there's a stranger at the table, even if at the table means on the phone, virtually, at the virtual table.
Yeah.
People just tend to behave a little better, and when that outside resource is there, because they're an outside resource, people tend to listen sometimes to the suggestions or the advice, whereas the sibling might say the exact same words, but it will be taken entirely differently.
Yeah, that's true. And when you say about selecting a family transition coach, you're really not talking about... you're talking about someone in addition to your regular attorney or a financial advisor. This is really something different from that, isn't it?
It is. It's somebody who really has what I like to liken it to is we are the conductors. So, you know, there's the attorneys, the accountants, the financial people, the physicians, the home health agencies, the care managers, all of these different kinds of people and resources that can be very helpful doing specific tasks.
Yeah.
What a coach can kind of do is help you assemble that team and figure out when to deploy them and make sure they're all talking to one another.
Yeah. Well, you tell us a little about your acclaimed new book, Facing the Finish, A Roadmap for Aging Parents and Adult Children. And I really like what was uniquely that it's written both for parents and adult children. And so, some of us that are getting up there in years, maybe our parents are gone, but we still might want to read that in terms of preparing so our children don't have a burden someday.
Well, that's exactly right. It's really written to bridge that generation communication gap we talked about early on. And you know, we kind of go through all the big issues: housing, money, healthcare, family relationships, the emotions of caregiving and care getting, all of it. And there's actually a companion workbook that goes with it that has specific exercises and checklists and things that you can actually do to implement the ideas that are presented in
Yeah, that is so important in a book, to either have a workbook or write in the book to have exercises, because if you just read something and don't work it out on a workbook or do some exercise yourself, it's likely to, you know, be gone in 6 weeks after you read it.
So true.
What's the best way that someone can preview and obtain your book? I know you have a website on the book, facingthetruth.com,
facingthefinish.com.
facingthefinish.com. Yeah, I went to that. And well, your firm, LifeBridge Solutions, offers a number of life and family transition resources. And briefly tell us about some of these.
Well, there's numerous things on the LifeBridge Solutions website that people can download for free. There's, as you mentioned, the Caregiver Survival Kit. There's the Housing Resource Guide. Oh. There's some white papers about medical billing advocacy. So there's all kinds of information about a variety of topics, and all of that is free. You simply have to go in and give your email address, and those things will come to you instantly.
Yeah.
In addition, on the Facing the Finish website, there's a place where you can click on Get Free Stuff.
Oh.
And when you go there, you can actually register to join our Facing the Finish community for free. And then there will be, from time to time, other special offers and resources that will come to members of the community.
Yeah, I like that when a community is formed based on a book or a website, because then you keep getting updates and can keep current on it, so that, and also keeps you fresh in your mind when you get updates like that. It's interesting that you offer medical billing advocacy, because I know a lot of people get frustrated and in trouble because they get bills from hospitals they don't really understand, or they can't afford to pay, and so it's great to have an advocate on that.
Well, it's very important, because, as you said, it is very confusing. You get this mail that says this is not a bill, but there's dollar signs and numbers all over it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that just don't even know what to do with that. So
yeah,
a lot of older adults will actually write checks and send them in, even when they don't owe any money.
Yeah, and I also like your daily money management services, because that might be very valuable for some older people who need some help in terms of managing their finances and just get all frustrated by bills and other things they have to plan for.
Well, that's right, and it's also another way to help them remain independent, because if they don't want their kids in their business, the best way to keep them out of it is to get the help they need somewhere else.
It's true. So do you serve clients all around the U.S., or is it specific geographic areas?
No, we do. We serve clients all over the country for all of our services, because they can all be done virtually or by remote control. The Internet is a wonderful place.
And they should go to LifeBridgeSolutions.com if they want to find out more about those services, I guess.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Sherry Simonton, for your most enlightening interview. And as you point out, advanced planning and preparation for the latter stages, both of our parents' lives and of our own, can make all the difference in the world over whether caregiving is a burden or a rewarding experience, both for parents and their adult children. And I urge you to preview Sherry Simonton's book and visit her two websites today. And thank you, Sherry, so much for this rewarding interview, and best success in moving forward.
Well, thanks so much. It was my pleasure.
Well, our prior guest, Sherry Simonton, talked about the challenges and mistakes to avoid in caring for our aging parents. And we're going to close today's program on a high note, because our next guest today, Gwen Sherilyn Sarandrea, is here to tell why having an aging parent move in can be the best decision you'll ever make. And she speaks from personal experience, because in 1994, Gwen invited her 80-year-old widowed father to move across the country from Pennsylvania to California, and together father and daughter bought a 1914 home and remodeled it together. And as Gwen puts it, the house became a metaphor for transformation for both of our lives and in our relationship. And Gwen has written a book about it, the soon-to-be-released The Healing House, The Gift of Dad's Final Years. And Gwen Sarandrea is an MA in clinical counseling and psychology. She's been in healing practice spanning 35-plus years, counseling individuals, couples, and groups. She's taught numerous classes, seminars, and workshops. And she's a certified master transformational coach and a transformational leadership coach. Has a number of other qualifications, including hypnosis, bioenergetics, chakra and energy healing, and cleansing. And she's also is a clairvoyant and does psychic readings, but unfortunately we won't have time to get into that today. But hello, Gwen, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Hi, Roy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, what motivated you to pursue your widowed 80-year-old father to move to California to purchase and fix up that house with you. It's a really unique idea.
Well, we had an arrangement where I would call him every Sunday night at 5 o'clock, and he'd be sitting by the phone, and he would tell me how these were his golden years, and he was having such a good time, and he was going out dancing with his girlfriend, and he was, it just would be very inspiring. But then his girlfriend got put into an Alzheimer's home, and he moved in with his brother and sat in front of the TV for 3 years.
Yeah.
So I my heart just opened one day, and I said, you know what, why don't you come out here and live with me? I work at home. I'm around all the time. I know you love to go to dancing, and I'll take you ballroom dancing. There's tea dances every other week, and we can go there and, you know, have dinner afterwards. And he goes, well, yeah, he says, let's see, there's no son-in-law, no kids, no pets. Yeah, I'll come.
Well, we always hear mostly about the downside of caring for aging parents and intergenerational living, but what are some of the inspirational positive benefits that you gained from the years you spent with your aging father?
Well, there just were so many. When he got off the plane, he was 80, and he looked like an old man.
Yeah.
He took one look at this old house we bought together, and he knew how to fix up houses. And after 6 months of working on that house together, he looked and felt 20 years younger.
I'd probably look 20 years older trying to fix up a house.
He felt useful and needed again. He felt loved. I took him dancing. All my friends welcomed him. He got to know the neighbors. He spent all his time in the yard, and he loved talking to all the people. He'd stop them and ask them who they were and where they lived and what was going on in their lives. He just really came back to life. And the other thing is, he brought me back to life, because at the time I was 50 years old and I was really feeling worn down by life, and I was on two medications, and I was able to get off the old meds to take care of him, and it brought me back to life too. So here I thought I was going to be helping him, and he really helped me.
Well, isn't that wonderful when you feel like you're responsible for somebody else, how your own problems seem to fade away, and you can be mutually healing for each other so many times when you have somebody else to care for and look out for.
Absolutely. And because I wanted to give my father a loving home, I received a beautiful home full of love.
Yeah.
So when you give someone else what they need most, you get what you need along the way.
Yeah. Well, based on your many years as a transformational coach, do you believe that your joyful and meaningful relationship with your elderly parent is typical, or is it really an exception? Does that happen in a lot of cases that when people gain a lot from having an aged parent moved in?
I think it helps. I think it's very common. You just don't hear about it because the people who complain are the ones that are the loudest. My father was a very loving person, and I really appreciated the time to get to know him as a mature woman rather than as a child and a parent. And when I was young, he was always working. You know, he came home from work, and he would work around the house, and he always, and then he had to go to bed early because he had to get up at 5 a.m. to go to work again. So this way, he was retired. I had time to sit and talk to him. I found out all of these old stories. It pieced things together for me that I was not aware of, and I got to know him on just a much deeper level. It was a wonderful experience, and I would do it over again in a heartbeat.
Well, what specific action plans and preparation do you recommend before mom or dad moves in? What are some of the absolute essentials that that are needed before you actually do it, or do you just kind of play it by as it comes? I don't know how that
works. When I invited him to come live with me, I had absolutely no idea how I was going to make it happen because I was in a one-bedroom apartment and I was in debt. But the thing is, you don't have to know how it's going to happen. What's necessary is to make a commitment, and the how will show up. Once I made the commitment, I started working on it, and things fell into place.
That's wonderful. That's, I think, probably the way it would work generally. If there's love involved and real respect for an elderly person, I think things would tend to fall into place.
Yeah, and you don't have to see that far ahead down the road. You only need to see a few steps down the road, and you take the few steps that are right in front of you, and then the next few steps appear. You know, it's like you're driving down the highway. You're only seeing a couple hundred yards ahead of you, but that's all you need.
Yeah, unless you have GPS.
I need GPS, yes.
When an aging parent moves in beyond basic support and healthcare needs, what does dad or mom need most from you? And I guess you probably covered that really before. It's just love and respect.
I would say love, yes. Feeling loved, it's like he called me out to introduce me to my neighbors that I hadn't met before, and he started to tell them how I had called him up and invited him to California to live with him. And he was just filled with pride, and I saw how much it meant to him that I called him up and invited him out. And tears just came down my cheeks, you know. It's like, oh, wow. He was able to leave the home where he had lived his entire life and all of his friends and family with honor and dignity. And everybody would, he'd say, I'm going to California to live with my daughter. You won't see me again. And they went, wow, boy, you are lucky to have your daughter ask you to come live with her.
I'm surprised they said, we'll come out and join you. Well, please describe some of the gifts that beloved seniors can give us if we're open to receiving them into our house. I know there's a number of things.
Oh, there is a number of things, but I want to give a really special thing here because so many people are afraid of death and dying. And actually, the greatest gifts came when my father got ill and was on his deathbed. When he collapsed from congestive heart failure and went into a light coma, my sister came up and we had him die at home with the help of hospice. Yeah. And the night before he died, I went into meditation and I started to work with his energy field, and I told him, you're afraid to leave this body because you think this is all there is, but you're really a spirit who can never die. And all you have to do is drop this old frail body like a worn-out suit of clothes and cross over into the light, and the angels are here to take you home. And the next day he was gone. After they took the body away, the greatest gift that I could have never imagined happened, which is I went into meditation and I immediately saw this vision of him alive and glorious on the other side. And he had two wonderful shining beings on either side of him, and he was just full of love and joy, and tears just came down my face and I felt exalted. So I got to see this vision into the other side and witness my father, you know, victorious, having crossed over. And this is a vision I will never forget. So I keep sharing this story with people who are dealing with death and dying because death is a sacred experience. It's not something to be feared.
It's not something I fear at all. Matter of fact, it sounds a lot like the last time I saw my mother. We were going to be out of town, and my father had died a couple years prior, but she was living in a nursing home at the time and was just kind of tired out of the daily routine, and she was kind of just shutting down. Her body was just shutting down because she wanted to shut down, really, and I remember looking her in the eye and say, you know, you're going to see Dad in just a few days. And she smiled and brightened up, and you can know that she was ready to move on to the next stage. And we had to go out of town for a couple of days, and she wasn't expected to go that quickly, but she went when we were out of town. But I didn't feel bad about it at all because I knew that she'd lived a full life. You know, she was 94 or something like that, and she was ready to go, and she wanted to go, and that's the way that that's a wonderful message. And it's wonderful that you heard from your father from the other side. I think that's great.
Yes, and if I hadn't spent those 4 years living with him and creating this deeper bond, I might not have ever been able to see that vision. So this was a gift hugely beyond my ultimate expectations.
Yeah, well, as parents age and become ill and their health and memory begins to their memory loss start to become major issues. In your book, you mentioned, as you mentioned before earlier, that after 5 years, you and your sister Carol shared home hospice care. Is that what you would recommend for most people if they can? Of course, you have to have the time and the ability to do that. But Are you a strong proponent of in-home hospice care as opposed to, you know, sending them to an old retirement home or a place like that?
Absolutely, because I did have my sister to help me, and I do work at home, so it worked for us. Hospice was just absolutely invaluable. They had a 24-hour nurse on call. You know, they set up all the equipment. They were wonderful. But it really gave us a chance to have my father's passing be a sacred experience. And
yes, that's wonderful.
And so much more personal than being in a hospital, or, you know, or somewhere else where you only visit and you're not really there.
True. No, I
would definitely recommend it.
We fortunately, when my mother was in that home, actually it was a retirement village where they had their independent apartment first, and then the last few years she had to move into a room and a care center, as they called it. But we were right here in town, and we visited her two or three times a week and stuff, so that we were able to keep contact with her so she wasn't alone. I felt so sorry for some of these older people that are in a home like that, and their children live far away, or maybe their children just don't give a darn and don't get over there. And then it is a very sad experience, really, for the children and for the adults if they don't see each other.
Yes, and the children really miss out as much as the parents do.
Well, tell us about your book, The Healing House, The Gift of Dad's Final Years. I think that's going to be coming out, you said, shortly.
Yes, it should be out soon. It really talks about our journey together, how it happened, and various experiences. Like I sent my father to a seniors club one day, and he came home laughing, and he said, "You sent me to a woman's club. It was all women."
Well, that's the way with seniors are, about 90% women, I think.
Yeah, he said, but they liked me, and they asked me to come back, and they asked him to come back every week, and they finally gave him a key, and he would set up the chairs and tables every week, and they would bake him cookies.
Well, I think I wouldn't mind being a man that was in a woman's club if the women weren't too bad looking and were nice to be around.
Yeah. So it just gives experiences like that. I really got to see my father's open heart and how he connected with everybody on the heart level, and just was really interested in people's lives and helping them. And he spent all this time out in the yard talking to people. And I realized after he was gone, when I was out in the yard weeding, people would stop and talk to me. And I went, oh, this is why Dad liked to be out here.
That's wonderful. You got to know your father all over again when you're both adults and mature adults, and can really appreciate a lot of things that you probably didn't realize he had when you were a child, because, you know, like you say, he was working all the time, and he was Dad, you know, the big guy and the provider, but he wasn't really, you probably didn't know him near as well as you do now.
Yes, that's very true. And now when I say, oh, I'm just like my father, I realize that's a good thing.
That your book will be available shortly, but how should the people check up to find out when exactly they can get it? Where should they go? Do you have a website or something that they can check back on?
Yes, they can go to counselingcaress.com. That's counselingcaress.com. And they can download a free angel healing audio there.
Oh, I see. You also tell us about the coaching and counseling services you offer. I know you have a number of different options on that website.
Yes, especially for people who are dealing with their aging and dying parents. I do have a lot of experience with that. I've also counseled people, you know, who are going through the death process themselves, you know, men and women with cancer, and helping them to release the old stuff and prepare for the new life that they're going to.
That's a wonderful service. And I know you have 1 or 2 hour sessions for single issues. You have weekly session packages, and you also do group seminars and workshops, I believe.
Yes, I do. All of that's available on counselingcaress.com.
Okay, so that's where they should go, and I'll definitely want to check that book out. You have some other books available we won't get into right now, including your Montage Mirage Photo Tapestries, which are really interesting. on a totally different subject.
Yes, thank you. These were all old family photographs that I took and put them together into beautiful montages to hang on the wall. Instead of buying art from somebody else, you make your own.
Yeah, that sounded right. I saw the pictures of that. They're very interesting. But if anyone has interest in that, they can refer to that in your website as well. And thanks, Gwen, so much for joining us today with your inspiring message that living with an aging parent in the home can be a wonderful blessing and not a burden. And best of success in the sale of your soon-to-be-released book, The Healing House. We'll be looking for it. And tune in next week when we'll talk about how to avoid feeling that you're sick when, in fact, you're not. And this is Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, and I'm Roy Richards, and so long for now.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.